Back at the time that that Jesus was talking, and I've seen one of these in color when they go back to the original stuff. And this is the way, this is the standard way a Hebrew bride dresses herself. And she normally looks exactly like this. It's very colorful. And the interesting thing about the Hebrew bride is that she looks just like a Christmas tree. Her dress, everything she wears, all the way up to the very top, looks exactly like a Christmas tree. Now my question is that by accident? One of the greatest things that will help you to have more faith in the Lord is to realize He goes into minute detail at times. I'm so amazed that He goes into so much detail. I wonder, why does He do that? And then I guess I come to the conclusion that it's because He wants you to study to show yourself approved. And a lot of pastors spend their whole lives preaching evangelical messages. And as they preach those evangelical messages, that's all they ever know. And you say, well, that's a terrible thing to say. Been around a long time. I've been to preachers' homes, and the first thing they usually do is open their drawer. And they look in, they say, hey, Tom, hey, Mac, you want my old sermon outlines? They got a whole desk filled in with files, and they got more messages in there on 3 points, a poem, a cloud of dust, than you can ever imagine. And after people leave the church and they're back down to a certain number, new ones come in and they haven't heard these messages. And they're messages like David was loafing, looking, lusting, and losing. They're messages like that. Well, when I first started, that's the kind of messages I preached. But as you study the Word of God, you see that you don't need to make up your own messages. You don't need to get your own ideas. You just need to study the Bible, study the customs and manners that were there, and study the kingdom of God. But you've got to be saved to do that. And you've got to get an awful lot up here of head knowledge before you start going into some of these things. Now, do I think that that's what the, that has something to do with the final heaven age and the temple? I do. Because there are preachers in the work and other preachers in other denominations that actually think it's a pyramid. So this is not some new religious belief that I brought in. I've always thought it was a pyramid. And most of them, I guess about 70% of them, think it's a huge block building, like an industrial building or like an apartment building. I don't. Now, I'm going to take a look. Look at all those different bulbs on there. And all those colors appear on the Hebrew bride. And when she's completed with her dressing, this isn't just one unique Hebrew bride. This is a bride. Can you hear me out there? I can't hear myself. Can you hear me, Mike? Okay. I can't even hear myself. Now, I'll be covering this and a whole lot more things. I'm sure glad I found all that stuff. Because, man, I didn't know zip when I came up here. And I know I don't know zip. But I'll be going through and talking about all those colors. Now, if you look at all those different colors, when I first came up here, and I started talking about the bride, because I knew the bride fairly well. But it's like anything else. You have to take your time and change your mind. And I went to a lot of seminaries, and 21 of them. And I talked to a lot of learned men. And after I had talked to all those learned men, I took from each one of them what I knew was right. And so what you see is a consolidation in this teaching of a lot of other preachers. Some preachers never go to any other churches, and they get an idea about things, and they think that that's got to be right and nothing else. I've had one of the best educations that any man in the American Baptist Association ever had, and it came from other preachers. I listen, and I change. Some preachers, after they get to a certain level, they just think they know everything. And if you try to talk to them, it's like talking to a brick wall. But I'm not that way. I listen, and if I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. I have run into preachers that never say they're wrong and never tell people they're wrong and not never apologize for being wrong. You say, well, why is that? They think they're never wrong. You have to learn in your life, you're going to have to make up your own mind. If you don't agree with me on stuff, it does not bother me. You think I'm that stupid after all these years, 84 years, and going to all the schools I've been to and all the courses I've taken? You think I don't understand how you think? I understand how I think. And a lot of the things I think and the way I thought was wrong. So I just change my mind and I learn from everybody I meet, especially if they're preachers and deacons or things like that that have had a lot of experience in a church. Now the holy city dressed as a bride. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride. As is used as a like. It's like a bride. It looks like a bride. And so you have to take that as. The word as is used as a particle. Tommy hadn't talked about particles yet, but he knows about particles. I taught him. But as is a particle. And it's as a bride, like it says, as a great mountain was cast into the sea. Was cast is eblethe, and it's a particle type of thing. And it doesn't mean that the great mountain was cast, it's because that's a different Greek tense. It means that it suddenly appeared in the sea, and John thought it was cast into the sea. So when he says as a bride, it doesn't mean it is a bride. Of course, it's pretty obvious here with this particle. Adorned for her husband. Okay. What does the Bible say about the bride? The bride prepared herself. How did she do it? She wore what her husband wanted her to wear. And she got to know him well enough that she wore what he wanted. And this was very, very popular around all the Hebrew men at that time, and that's normally what they wore. And the building of the wall was it as of jasper. Now, I went and looked up all of these metals, and I looked them up in the Strong's Concordance. I looked it up everywhere. And when I went through and taught this, and I will when we get further on in Bible Manners and Customs, but tonight isn't about Bible Manners and Customs, then it says, and the fountains of the city were garnished with all sorts of precious stones. Jasper, sapphire, chalcedony, emerald, sardonyx, the sixth, sardis, the seventh, chrysolite, beryl, topaz, cyphrasus, the jacinth, and amethyst. Now, I know I can tell you what color they all were. Can I remember them? No, but I'll have them for you when I get to that part. Those are all the colors found in the holy city. And those are the colors of the rainbow. And these down here are the colors of the rainbow. Now, some might say that, it doesn't just say that. I fought that all my life. You don't have to study much if you just read it and say, means just what it says. That's no better than the Church of Christ. They say it means just what it says. You have to study to find out what the Bible really is saying, because it was written in a culture nothing like ours. And it was written in a culture where the words meant certain things. You say, well, that is not in the Old Testament. And Abraham's supposed to be in it. Abraham looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker are God. There are 12 foundations to this building. And if you go back and take the time and start having to wear glasses with 4 different types of lenses in them, you'll learn something. But if you flash into the Bible like I did, you learn a few things and you think you know everything. I'm sorry, but you're never going to amount to any more than you are at that particular time. And I stayed that way for a long time until I ran out of new things to preach. They weren't phony, but I said, I got to start studying more. And I did. And I unfortunately probably made it too technical. But the truth is, I've simplified it a lot. If you don't learn to simplify complicated things, you'll never amount to a hill of beans. Ken, you want to pass these out? Michael, you pass that out. You pass that. Give everybody.
He needs one, Ken.
I need one, and I need. I wish I wasn't so old.
You want one of those, Mike?
Yeah.
Yeah. These ones.
And give everybody
one of those.
I'm gonna go through here lickety split. I want to give Leonard plenty of time to teach back there. But I also know that I won't have a lot of time teaching you this. You look like an old college professor. What are you looking so sad about? Did I say something made you mad? I hope not. Oh. Huh?
I want Leonard to learn that, don't you?
Oh, well, no, Leonard knows all about this. This stuff here, well, Leonard was still down in Texas when I started doing this. And this is something that it surprised me because this is the same thing I taught when I first came up here. But every once in a while, I just stop and go back and have a long review, because we were getting some additions back then. We hadn't had any additions in years when I came up here. And we were getting some additions, and so once in a great while, I'd just go back through the whole thing. And when I came across this one in 2006, I thought, I'm going to just run through that. Now, what I'd like for you to do, I took this straight from the Bible. You don't see anything between the verses. I didn't use any illustrations. I didn't use anything. I just used and preached this straight through the Bible. There's nothing in between these that shows you diagrams, charts, and everything else. Nothing. And I did that for a reason. I showed them all the diagrams and all the charts and all that stuff the first time I went through it. And I wanted to see just how much they remembered. I was surprised they remembered a lot. So here I am, and this is the message I preached in 2006 of the prophecy generally that I had taught all the way from when I first came up here. So here we go. Now, as I go through here, I want you to think about what's happening over there right now. Remember when I came up here, everybody thought that the Antichrist was coming out of Europe, and I mean everybody. I didn't. Never did. And everybody was preaching a whole bunch of stuff. That when I came back out of the service after 20 years in there, they had changed everything. And I wanted to know why. I didn't raise a stink in the seminary. I didn't say one single solitary word about what I believed about anything. I sat there and listened and learned. If you don't sit and listen and learn, even if you don't agree with somebody, how are you ever going to know whether they're right or wrong? And don't form favorites. Don't pick out, oh, I like this fella, he's real nice, until you find another one that you think is a little nicer. Nice doesn't mean a thing in this. Buddy-buddy doesn't mean anything in this. Happy-happy-happy doesn't mean a thing in this. What means something is, do you prove it to them first and use diagrams and charts so they can remember it? Well, I think you remember this. Daniel 7, 13, 14. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him before him. I knew that was Jesus. I taught it was Jesus when I first came up here. And there was given him dominion. I taught him what dominion meant. And glory. I taught him about glory and the glory of God and the resurrection. I taught him about Paul and all the other stuff. I taught him a whole bunch of stuff. But I've learned a lot from Leonard. And I've learned a lot from other people. And don't believe somebody just because you think that they like you more. Believe somebody because they love you and try to teach you the truth, even sometimes if it's painful. And a kingdom. I knew exactly what that meant. And I knew that there was a kingdom, a millennial kingdom. And I knew that there was a final kingdom. And I taught everybody, when I first came up here, I started teaching them that. Just exactly what I teach now. That all peoples and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. In other words, you're going to have a new earth in the heaven age. But before that, you're going to have a millennial age. You're going to have a kingdom on the millennial age. You're going to have a kingdom in the final heaven age. There are two different kingdoms. But at the end of the millennial reign, it clearly states that that kingdom will go on forever. How can that be? Well, it's very simple. It just keeps on going forever right into the final heaven age. And I would tell that to preachers and they'd say, how do you know that? And I've heard over again. Well, if you don't preach the word, it's going to be just like that. Well, that's what I'm doing. If it says that the millennial kingdom is going to continue forever and forever, it has to phase into the final heaven kingdom. You can't just take the Bible and say, it says this, it means this. You've got to consider it with other scriptures. And if you don't consider it with other scriptures, you're missing the mark. That's the way you prove scriptures to be right or wrong. In your own mind. He says, and the 10 horns out of this kingdom, well, he says, shall serve him. The dominion is everlasting, which will not pass away, and his kingdom that shall not be destroyed. Okay, that settles it. It goes on forever. Once you get raptured, you're going to be in a new world forever. Time doesn't going to mean a thing to you. You're going to go right on the millennial reign, right on into the final heaven age. It tells what's going to happen to you in the interim period. You say, well, why don't preachers preach on that? They're too darn lazy. They think they know too much. And they don't think they need to know any more. And I'm tired of it. I'm absolutely sick of it. But it's not going to change because I'm sick of it or tired of it. So at least I'm going to tell you about it. So you'll learn to sit up and listen and make your own decision. I don't care if you don't agree with me, but make sure that what I present to you is right. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom. Oh, looky there. We switch down to verse 24. What happens in between 20 there and 24? I taught them that. I taught them when it comes to a certain thing, that means to stop and go on, and then you'll come to another little thing that looks like this, and then stop. And here's a new subject. But in between there, he's still talking about the Antichrist prophecy and all things of that nature. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall arise after them. Who is that horn that arises after them? It's the Antichrist. The ten toes are the same thing as the 10 horns of Daniel. They're over there right now. And they're building up eventually with this wonderful new thing that we're going to accept. of a way that we can prolong the peace. And I guarantee you it will get Obama through to his legacy. But as far as I'm concerned, Obama is Benedict Arnold. And as far as I'm concerned, John Kerry is Chamberlain, the one who led Britain into war, really. And the truth of the matter is, we are going to have a while. I don't expect the initial attack, not the end of the tribulation, but the initial attack against Israel to occur until the tail end of the next administration. But think how it's going to last for about 3.5 years. We got plenty of time. And so why do we go into all this stuff? I'm trying to get my life straightened out with the Lord, where I'm not envious, I'm not jealous, I'm not hateful. I'm trying to get it where I'm more virtuous, where I'm more have better control, where I have more knowledge of the Bible. All these things are found in 2 Peter. And when I first found them, I thought, oh boy, that'd be good to preach. That'll impress people. But after I studied it, I said, good grief, that's you. And after a while, I began to try and change. Those are all the characteristics of Christ. So what good is it if you tell them the truth about all this stuff and his coming, and they just sit there and don't do a blinking thing about it? And another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. I've already told you, I think one of them's Lebanon, one of them's Libya, and the other one is Egypt. And he shall speak great words against the Most High and shall wear out the saints of the Most High. That was Israel at the time, and that's what we are now. And think to change times and seasons. That's Sharia law. That's exactly what he's doing. He's trying to change the law, even in the United States and in England and across Europe. That's exactly what he's trying to do. What else do you have to do? Jesus wrote this, and they didn't even know what Sharia law was back then. The Arabs weren't even in existence because he knew we were going to be here. So why don't preachers realize that? They want 3 points a poem, a cloud of dust, let's all go home now, because we know we're going to be raptured out the first of the week. And they walk out feeling good, feeling great, feeling marvelous. That's pure, absolute baloney. And the truth of the matter is, most of the missionary Baptists sit there and suck it up, and they think that we're heretics. That's all right. I don't mind that. The prophets of all the Bible, you'll discover that the prophets that the kings always stuck to were the false prophets. But the judgment shall set, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it unto the end. You know that's going to happen. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey. I can't wait to have no will of my own except the will of the Lord. I can't wait until all of a sudden I don't have any will of my own anymore. I wish I didn't have one now. If I lost my mind, I wouldn't have any will of my own. So I really don't want to lose my mind, although I suppose I'm getting close to it. I want that. And when he tells me to go do something, I want to run just as fast as I can and do it. I want to be a bondservant to him. I want to be like the servant in the Old Testament that when it came time for him to be set free during the year of Jubilee, a lot of them liked their master so much, they put a little mark in their ear. Then they belong to him forever. I want that mark in my ear because I've followed my own way long enough. I've fought against my carnal nature now for 83 years, and I didn't even know I was fighting against it when I was a baby. But the truth of the matter is, most people don't like that idea that they are a bond servant, and it's actually a bond slave. I want to be a bond slave. The truth of the matter is, I didn't used to want to be one. I thought, oh my, when I get to heaven, I'll lose my will. No, I just surrender to the Lord. That's what I should do right now. Because in Jesus Christ, there were two wills. He was in clear, complete surrender to the office of the Father throughout his ministry. Man, you say, what are you saying? I want to be like Jesus. I don't want all that power. Well, if I guess if I had all that power, I'd know how to use it. I just I'm perfectly satisfied to work under his power and just not gain all that power, but just do exactly what he told me. Because as far as I'm concerned, he's the head of the church. He's the foundation of the church. The church is his body, and we are his servants. And we're bond servants if we're living like we're supposed to, or we're trying to be bond servants. And he said, and the kingdom, and blah, 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 whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Now let's take a look at the millennial kingdom. This is where I will go after the judgment seat of Christ. And I will go right on up and wait in heaven. You say, well, tell me about that. Well, I won't be a martyr, I don't think. I haven't got that much courage. And God will have to give me plenty to be a martyr. But I'll be in heaven. I'll be waiting as a soul around his altar at the bottom. That doesn't mean I'll be further out. I won't be a martyr, I don't think. But I'll be further out, and my soul will be there, and I will not have a glorified body. Period. It will be my soul, and it will not be clothed. Ezekiel 41 through 4. Now, after the judgment seat of Christ, which will follow the end of the tribulation period, which will be at the very end of the seven vials of wrath, here's where I'll be, and here's where you'll be. In the 25th year of our captivity, in the beginning of the year, in the 10th day of the month, in the 14th day of the year, after the city was smitten, in the selfsame day, the hand of the Lord was upon me and brought me thither, and the visions of God brought me into the land of Israel and to a very high mountain. I believe that was Mount Tabor. Now, why do I believe it was Mount Tabor? Because that's what most preachers believe. But I don't know why they believe it, but I know why I believe it. The millennial temple is not going to be, if you ever go to Israel, you'll see used to be a long wall went all the way around it. And it wasn't all that big. Still not that big. And that was the temple, part of the temple complex. And outside of it was the domain of the nation of Israel. And whenever you went, the temple was right here. And if you went up this way, you'd come to a wall. And just on the other side of it was where they say Jesus was buried, but he wasn't. He was buried back here in this area, outside the inner wall. And in any case, that city in the millennial reign, the northern wall, will go all the way up past Shiloh. That's Jacob's well. And almost reach into Syria. And the other part will go all the way south down into the Negev. And the eastern side will go all the way over into, remember where he left some of the tribes over there because they didn't want to cross over the Jordan? It will go all the way over and take Jordan. It will take Ammon, Jordan, and Moab. Now, that's why I believe it's Mount Tabor. Because Mount Tabor, he got to see the outline of the whole city. Actually, I believe it extends up to the Tell of Megiddo. And so, you know, you all have been to the Tell of Megiddo. If you have been, you know that that's a long way north from Jerusalem. And the other one down in the Negev wilderness, way down to that, all the way into it, all the way almost down toward a Lot, which is on the sea, which is on the part that comes up out and makes a little and hits in at a Lot. It's a little coastal city. We've been down there, and that's going to be a huge city. So there's going to be plenty of room down there. So don't think that the millennial reign is going to consist of just a few people. I got a picture over there, the most beautiful picture I've ever seen of that city and what it will look like by a really good artist. I've never seen so many people. coming but following Jesus into the millennial temple. That's exactly what's going to happen. That's in the 43rd chapter of Ezekiel. See, if you study this stuff, you'll find out, man, this is unbelievable. It is believable. And he even gives you diagrams and dimensions, and there's not one single inconsistency in all those diagrams. He says, in the visions, he brought me into the land of Israel and set me on a very high mountain. Remember when we were there, up there on Tel Megiddo, and we looked across and I showed you. He says, by which he was as the frame of a city on the south. I think that's Mount Tabor, but he doesn't say so. But that's a very tall mountain, and the city of Jerusalem will extend up to there at that time. I've had preachers, they just don't think. They don't think. They're like robots turned out of a seminary. They don't think. And so they say, well, you, first time I ever taught that, they said, well, Brother McElmurray, you can't see Jerusalem from Mount Tabor. I said, I know that. But I said, do you know how far north the new millennial city goes? I said, is this talking about the millennial city? Yeah. I said, go look. Every time I'd see some of them in the hall, they'd go one way or the other. They avoided me like the plague. And I wasn't that bad a guy. But if they said something to me that was dead wrong, and they called me on it, what do they expect me to do? Say, oh, yeah, right. So I won't hurt anybody's feelings. Man, I'm just like old Jack, old Don, what's his name? Yeah, I don't know. Boy, I'll be glad when this. I'm so sick of this election. I wish they'd ship them over to Iran and say, will you give us those three men for this bunch? No, I don't really mean that. He says, and he brought me thither, and behold, there was a man whose appearance was like the appearance of brass. That signifies judgment. And a line of flax in his hand. And that's what they used. Flax is pretty hard to pull apart. And a measuring reed, and that reed was like a long reed that you'd get out of a... I think it was about 18 inches long. It's a royal reed. And a line of flax in his hand, and a measuring reed. That was the 18-inch one. And he stood in the gate, and the man said unto me, that's a foot and a half, with thine eyes, and hear with thine ears, and set thine heart upon all I shall show to thee, to the extent I might bring thee unto thee, art thou brought thither, declare all that thou seest to the house of Israel. Okay. Now you want to see the river going out of that millennial temple? There's one going out of the city. I showed Ken one the other night over in the Old Testament, and I said, those are leaves from a teal tree. And they aren't teal trees, but the teal tree in the Old Testament is the same picture that's presented.
They're going to hear that again.
No, listen. I have never seen anything like the Bible in my life. If you realized what a synoptic analyst did... And how he got pounded if he didn't do it right. I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like the Bible. There isn't anything like it. There's nothing like it. I looked at that, and I do the measurements on all of them, and I look at the content, and I look at the leaves, and they all match. And it involves judgment. And I ain't going to tell you where that is, but I might tell you tonight and steal a little Kenneth's thunder.
Isaiah chapter 6.
These are the goings out of the city on the north side, 4,500 measures. And the gates of the city shall be after the names of the tribes of Israel, three gates northward, one gate of Reuben, one gate of Judah, one gate of Levi, and at the east side, 4,500, and three gates, and one gate of Joseph, and the gate of Benjamin, and the gate of Dan, and at the south side, 4,400 measures, and three gates, and the gate of Issachar. The gate of Zebulun, and the west side 4,500, and there are three gates, one gate of Gad, one gate of Asher, one gate of Naphtali. It was round about 18,000 measures, and the name of the city from that day shall be the Lord is there. There it is, and he's going to be right there in that millennial temple. And now, listen, man, if you look over in the book of Ezekiel, at the last, in chapter 40, in the last chapter, of Ezekiel, just look over if you got your Bible. It'll give you exact dimensions all the way around it. And it's deadly accurate. It fits in with all these measures. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. You can just take that and say, good grief, that thing goes over into Jordan and Moab and all through that. That's where the tribe settled. It goes clear to the other side. It's all of the land that God assigned Israel. And it's right there. Isn't that what I've taught here? All for 40 years. That when they come up out of the Negev at the end of it, and like the cloud in the wilderness was leading them, and Jesus is leading them, they're going to go all the way around. And anybody that doesn't believe that and is saved, I won't have my carnal nature, so I won't have a chance to say, nah, 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 nah. I won't want to. You'll be so happy you won't care who was right and who was wrong. And you'll be happy even if you're going to be there if you're saved. You're going to get to see that. And you're going to say, boy, what is that? And somebody's going to have to tell you. And now is the time to find out about it. Especially if you're a pilot. They'll be done away with in the millennium. And they'll be done away. And the pilots will be turned into preachers. You guys, I don't know. Remember when they kicked that bunch of captains out? What?
Riff.
The what?
Riff.
Yeah, they're gonna riff both those pilots out there. But listen, I got some good news for you. I'm like humility. I'm just a little E9, but I'll help you, Captain. You can take it, brother. I appreciate you. Okay, the heavenly kingdom and its dominion. Psalm 103, verses 19 and 22. Just 22, 19 then, just the first 22. The Lord has prepared his throne in the heavens, and his kingdom ruleth over all. Bless the Lord and his works in all places of his dominion. Bless the Lord, O my soul. I hope I don't end up working for you. You'll remember all this stuff. Hebrews 12, 20, 22 through 29. But ye are coming to Mount Zion. Here we go. Unto the city of the living God. Wow, I wonder what city that is. It's Mount Zion, Jerusalem, innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly. I wonder what that is. Well, it's an assembly. Wow, that sounds something like a church. It's a church in the wilderness. And what does this word mean, paragosia? It means an assembly of Israel when they brought all the tribes together. And how many of them out there were 12? Where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. And guess who was leading them? It was the cloud. Guess who was in the cloud? Jesus. And you look at all that stuff, man, that's what this is. Here's where we're going. Here's where we're going to see in the Holy Assembly. And the Church of the Firstborn, that's us. The faithful. To the General Assembly and Church of the Firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God, the Judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect. Anytime you see that word just, I'll give you a hint. It doesn't always work, but most of the time. And the spirits of justified men. God operated in the role of the Son to be a propitiation for men's sins. And two verses later, it says, that he might be just. Just put a justified on there. God justifies himself. And he makes it where you can understand it. He wants you to know, I am not somebody that does things according to a different set of rules for each person. He said that he might be just and the justifier. That's the Redeemer. The office of Christ. To both the Redeemer. To the redemption. He says, made perfect. Now that word there really does mean perfect. It means complete. It means finally you won't have a carnal nature. You can throw away your broom and not hit your husband anymore. And to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant. Yeshua. I ran into an article today from a woman out in California. It's the best article I ever read in my life. on Yeshua. And when she went through those scriptures, believed exactly the same thing I believe. And I just was amazed, because I don't know what she is, but I'm going to find out. Man, it was great. And to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel. See that ye refuse not him that speaketh, for if they escape not who refused him that spake away from him that speaketh from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth, but now he hath promised, saying, yet once more I shake not the earth only, it's coming, and it's coming soon, but also heaven, heaven and earth will shake. This thing is right on our doorstep, and the war that starts and goes on to the end of it is precisely on time. Well, Pope used to, only bishops could forgive abortion. But now, good news, during this free month, the free year, last part of the rest of the year, fiscal year, the regular old Catholic bishop, the regular old regular priest, he can forgive abortion. Isn't that wonderful? God of mercy. What next? What next? And I wrote a blog several months ago, and I put in there, this is it. This is the end. And we're getting these things happening right down the line. I ought to be depressed. And my soul, I guess, is about what's happening with all these ungodly things that non-believers and some believers are doing. But I'm not depressed, because I know that Christ is my Savior, and I know He's going to watch over me, and I know that my future is in His heaven, and I know if I have to die, I have to die. And so, whatever. Yet once more I will shake not but heaven, and yet once more, signifying the removal of those things that are shaken, and of things that are made which cannot be shaken. Wherefore we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved. Let us have grace. I mean, just realize you were saved by grace. There's more to grace than just salvation of the soul. Grace extends to all of God's dealings with you. And godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. Revelation 27 through 10, and when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison, and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth. Gog and Magog. Now, those are the people that ran in chapter 66 of Isaiah. And they ran when the Lord came, and they ran north, and they told all the people back there in the place where they came from, the few that survived, that they had seen this Lord come back. And that spread all over the earth, and for 1,000 years, the Lord was able to maintain control. And he still could have. But he gave man another 1,000 years to repent. Many of them, and many of them will. And there will be some saved in the millennium, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. By the end of the millennial reign, mankind will be like the sand of the sea. And they will come back against the city of Jerusalem. They will throw out what they have learned after 1,000 years. And the beloved city, they didn't believe the ones before them. And quite frankly, we don't believe the ones before us. And the fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. This is not volcanic eruption. This is pure latent energy. I believe that's what God is. Pure latent energy that is able to love, to have compassion, to have virtue, and all the things that are written in 2 Peter. I believe that. You see, I don't believe God has legs. I don't believe He has arms. But I believe if He wants to have legs and wants to have arms and appear to us like that, He does it. You say, well, you're crazy. I know a lot of other preachers that believe the same thing, and they're not crazy. God is love. You say, well, latent energy can't learn. How do you know? God is light. That's what latent energy is. You go through with all those little things it says about God. Right now I feel warm inside. because I feel like I'm telling you the truth. That's latent energy. How do you think he appeared out of nowhere? How do you think the angels appear out of nowhere? Wouldn't you like to have somebody that, even though you couldn't see him, he was right there beside you? You've got somebody that's right there beside you. And he'll never leave you. And he'll never forsake you. That movie they had a long time ago, God is My Co-Pilot. God was sitting right there with that man. If he had enough pilot, if he had enough sense to know that God was his co-pilot, God was right there with him. And if that plane had crashed, I guarantee you the moment that pilot woke up dead, he'd glorify God and wish that he thing had crashed earlier. Deceive them which were cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, which are and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. Hey, I made it. 2 minutes. Now, that's exactly what I taught when I came up here. And all this other stuff that we're going through now, each one of us has learned an awful lot. And some of us don't agree on some small things, and it doesn't matter. We have wonderful fellowship between the preachers. Everything's just fine, peachy, keen. And we're learning together. And we're learning, you can't ever learn enough. So, Ken, you want to dismiss us?